I'm pulling up my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay, so in my article, Making Magic, I'm doing a three-part series about the history of tokens. So what I'm going to be doing in this podcast is what I do in my article is I go set by set and talk about every innovation I can see where I think how tokens have evolved as a design tool. And I get pretty granular. I'm sure I miss a few tiny things, but I'm pretty good about talking about when we do something we haven't done before. And early on in the article, it talks a lot about like individual card design. And by the end, I'm talking like mechanic design. So my goal of today is this is a supplemental podcast that goes along with the three-part series. So there'll be a little bit of overlap, meaning that there's some material I will cover in both. But the idea is the article is a little more a run-through of what happened. And the today's podcast is a little more of analysis. So really what I want to talk about is tokens as a design tool. They have become a very, very big design. I mean, as 3 weeks, the fact that I could write 3 weeks of articles about it should demonstrate that there's a lot going on. So I want to talk a little bit about why tokens, why do they exist, why did they start, and how they've evolved over time. That's today's topic. Okay, so tokens begin back at the very beginning of Magic in Alpha. So one of the things I think Richard was really interested in when he made Alpha was he really wanted to sort of test some boundaries of what the game could do. So there are a lot of cards in Alpha, like single cards that do something that end up becoming a whole swath of area of design that Richard just did one card. And a lot of what I could tell is, you know, when you sort of make a card game like Magic, there's a lot of possibilities. And part of what Alpha was showing was the range that the game could be, and Richard really enjoyed poking into a lot of areas. In fact, some of the areas he poked into ended up being stuff like we put off to Silver Border, like Chaos Orb, where you flip a card in the air, like physical, dexterity. And that's something the game has sort of moved away from outside, on cards. But anyway, one of the cards he made was called The Hive. And so the idea of the hive was it represented a hive, but not one creature. It was a hive worth of wasps. And the idea was that this one hive could make many wasps. Okay, but how exactly do you do that? And so Richard had obviously a fan of gaming and games, and that there's a lot of games where you use extra components. You have little pieces. And the idea was, well, what if the card did something and then you use something else to represent it? Like this card made more things than a single card could represent. And I think in Richard's mind, it's like, oh, okay, go get whatever, coins in your pocket, whatever you need, just something that can represent this. And the really interesting about it, which I think is why tokens have the longevity they've had, is this idea that a card can produce more content than a card is very interesting. And a lot of what token design is the reason I think R&D has embraced it so much is twofold. One is, from a design standpoint, it just opens up so much possibility. There's so much design space in it. And the other part of it is the popularity. And I'll get into the popularity of the hive in a second. But players really, really like tokens. They're very popular. So the idea was that, okay, I have this card. It can produce multiple things that are made by the card. And the very first thing Richard made with tokens was creatures. The hive were 1/1 flying creatures, not even just vanilla. They were flying creatures because they were wasps. I think that Richard, sort of early on, I don't think he was thinking necessarily of this is the groundswell of all this stuff as much as like, oh, I need to make this card. How do I make this card? Okay, well, here's the tools available to make this card. Richard also made a couple cards that used counters on them. And it's like, well, I need to track something. Okay, I guess you'll put something on the card to track it. Like, I think Richard was like, okay, the magic was pretty condensed and all you needed was a card. So like, okay, I'm willing to let you, I think the way he thought about it I use change in your pocket as an example, which is, okay, you probably have something you're carrying on you, change in your pocket, that, okay, I have a few, if I need to mark something on a card or mark something as a token, I got a few things in my pocket I could use. That's not hard. And that, there weren't a lot of, in fact, Alpha had one card that made tokens. I had a couple cards that made counters, but there wasn't a lot there. I mean, as I'll get into, eventually we recognized the value of them and started making tokens, but we'll get there. Token cards. Okay, so Richard made the Hive. Now, one of the things to remember about Alpha, and I've talked about the Hive in other podcasts, it was insanely popular. It was, you know, there was something about the coolness of making tokens that was instantly sort of recognized as something really cool. I remember the day that I opened the Hive in a booster pack, and I was so excited because I knew that that was the only way I was going to get a Hive. No one would trade me the Hive. It was very, very popular. So anyway, Richard makes that. Then in Arabian Nights, the story is Richard makes Alpha. It sells much better than they expect, and so they have to fast-track making some expansions. They go to Richard. Richard quickly makes Arabian Nights based on, inspired by a Sandman comic, Sandman 50, I believe. But anyway, it's inspired by 1001 Arabian Nights, you know, sort of Persian stories, Middle Eastern stories. And in it, he makes two more cards. First is he makes Rook Egg. And Rook Egg is, I think it's 03. It's a creature that when it dies, or maybe it's a 01. It's a creature that when it dies, it's probably a 01. When it dies, it hatches and it makes a rook, which is a 4/4 flying creature. And then there was a bottle of Suleiman, which you had, I think it cost 4, then 1 to activate, then you flipped a coin. And either it did 5 damage to you, or you got a 5/5 flying djinn. A little higher variance than we do these days. But, in each case, Richard was like, I have a cool idea. I like the idea of an egg that is harmless, but when it dies, it hatches into this powerful flying, I mean, sort of a dragon, a rook. And the idea I had this, you know, a bottle that a genie can come out of, but maybe the genie helps me, maybe the genie hurts me. Like, you don't know. And each of those cases, just the token was the thing that let him make it. And that's another sort of through line today about tokens, is that the tokens just allow card design that you can't do without them. That there's just a lot of really neat space. And both Rook Egg and Bottle of Suleiman were interesting designs. So the next set, Antiquities, makes Tetravis. So Tetravis, was a, 1/1 creature, with flying that comes with 3 +1/+1 counters. And then, during upkeep, I think, you can move the counters on or off. And if you move them off, they become 1/1 flying creatures that can't be enchanted. Tetravite tokens. Or you can move them back on. So they come off and on. Tetravis was really, really popular. Tetravis and Triskelion, probably the ones I remember being the most popular out of the gate. There's some powerful cards that saw a lot of play, but those are the two sort of fan favorites. And interestingly, one uses counters, they both use counters, I guess, and one uses tokens. Also interesting, by the way, Antiquities has the 4th token-making card, and up to that point, all of them fly. All the tokens fly. It's interesting to know. But anyway, as you can start to see, just an early thing, the designers are figuring out, okay, these tokens just allow cool things. So we get to Legends, and Legends actually starts just, we said, this is important enough, we're going to name them. We're going to stop defining what tokens are. Because the early cards had to tell you, okay, make a token. In fact, it's funny, the Hive refers to them as tokens. I believe the two cards in Arabian Nights refer to them as counters. And then they're tokens again by the time you get to Antiquities. And by the time you get Legends, token becomes a game term. That if you make a token, or create would come later. But if you make a token, the idea that... So one of the things that the early token cards establish is a couple things. One is that you are making this thing, this permanent creature in this case, but tokens could not be creatures. You're making this permanent, a creature, that is going to coexist outside the existence of the Hive. If you destroy the Hive, this thing still goes around. You know, the Rook Egg dies, and this token, so the Rook Egg's long gone before the token gets there. Same with, you have to sacrifice the bottle. Like, the idea that the token is separate from the thing that makes it was key. And the other big thing was, when it goes to the graveyard, poof, it disappears. Why does it disappear? Well, there's no thing to represent it. That I can't track a thing, like, Richard understood that it's one thing in play, you know, on the battlefield to have, like, a coin or a glass bead or a die or something, but there's no way really to represent that inside the graveyard. So the idea was, when it leaves the battlefield for whatever reason, it just goes away. And that was established very early with the Hive. So those qualities of the idea that it can stand on its own thing, you can tap it, like it's a permanent. Like, it's not a card, but it is a permanent. Just the idea that is true. And then what happens when it goes away? So in Legends, when they define what a token is, those qualities are baked into it. That it's represented by something that's not a card, that thing exists on its own, and that if it goes away, if it goes to any other zone, it just goes away. I believe, by the way, in the early days, I don't think we had the rule that it went to other zones and then disappeared. Eventually what we did is, the rules now, in fact, this isn't in my article, for a while, tokens didn't trigger death triggers because they didn't go to the graveyard. And then eventually we realized it was so non-intuitive, like, because we talked about things dying, like, well, don't they die? They die, they go away, that we changed the rules so the tokens go to the graveyard but then sort of dissipate the second they hit the graveyard, meaning they trigger death triggers, which they do. And a lot of things, one of the things that is interesting in the article is, a lot of what happens in the early days of token making is, we try to do something, usually inspired by, here's a cool card design. Like, Legends did a couple cool things. One was Staying. Well, Staying wanted to make a twin. So the idea is, when you cast Staying, you're really getting two Stayings, not one Staying. But where does the second Staying come from? Okay, we'll make a token. But because they're intertwined, the idea that Staying and his twin, if one dies, the other die, they're interconnected together. Same with Hazan Tamar, which has these sand creatures. And the idea is, it makes some number of creatures, and it's a variable. The first time we did a variable, we're like, oh, you get a number of sand counters equal to the number of lands you have. And those, it's Hazan Tamar that is bringing the sand to life, that, you know, he's making sand warriors. But if he goes away, the sand, they just go back to sand. So the idea is, the tokens go away when he goes away. So the idea that you can have tokens that are innately tied. Yeah, tokens coexist by themselves, but you can have one like Staying or like Hazan that have a connectivity to the thing that creates them. Or maybe to something else, these ones that create them. Also, there's Master of the Hunt that made sort of different wolf tokens. And then they had bands with other wolves, meaning... so far, the only tokens we had made had flying. But you know what? You can have other qualities. So the wolves have bands with other wolves. Is it Snake Pit? So there's a card in Legends that makes poison snakes. Legends introduced the idea of poison. There's two cards. There's Pit Scorpion and... I'm blanking the name of it. And the artifact that makes the snakes. The idea is that when they hit you, they deal. Essentially, it was kind of poisonous without defining the word poisonous yet. But the idea is, when they hit you, you get a poison. And 10 poison, you lose the game. That was, you know, a brand new thing. Kind of one of the earlier alt-win conditions. I guess the first alt-win condition probably was in Antiquities, which was... that's where Millstone first showed up. But... milling was a core part of the game, meaning milling was baked into the game from the very beginning. Poison, I think, was the first time that, other than doing something that's built into the base game, which is going to zero or not being able to draw a card, could you lose. So the real part of this is, designers realize that tokens have a lot of design potential in them. So the first set that really goes all in on tokens, I would say, would be Fallen Empires. And tokens and counters. So much so that when Fallen Empires came out, in the Duelist, the Magic magazine at the time, there was actually a punch-out sheet that came in the Duelist that had all the tokens and counters you needed. There were five main factions. Each color had its own faction, and then there was like there were two different creature types that mattered for each of the factions. And then for each color, for each faction, there was one card that made tokens of that faction. And so, you know, saplings, the first time a sapling got made, thralls got made, there were goblins. So there were, you know, really you're starting to see the designers go, counters are not just an individual card thing. Like, you can shape larger designs around them. So I think the first... Mostly what happens, and if you read my article, you can see, is just we start leaning more and more into it. Another important thing before I get to us starting to make creature mechanics out of tokens. So in 1998, I'm given a fun assignment. So Bill Rose and Joel Mick come up with the idea of a set that is not tournament legal. It has a silver border. And they came to me and they said, okay, we're not sure what you do with this, but what can you do if you don't have to worry about them being played in tournaments? And so I came up with the idea of Unglued. And one of the ideas I was very fascinated by, I used to do, when I say magic, I don't mean the game Magic. I mean magic tricks. I used to be a magician when I was a kid. I would do tricks for kids' parties, do shows. I was the Whiz Kid. That was my magic name. There was one of the things you can get when you're like, there's a lot of tricks you can buy, and there's a lot of card tricks you get. So one, there's a company that sold lots of card tricks, and one of the things they sold was a deck, and the deck wasn't specifically a card trick. It just had a lot of interesting cards in it. For example, it had like a black three of diamonds or a seven and a half of clubs. You know, it just had cards that, like, weren't quite normal. There's something quirky about them. And the idea was that you, the magician, could sort of pick and choose, and you could kind of make your own tricks. Like, is it fun to, like, you know, maybe do a card trick where I have your card, it's the seven of clubs, you know, where you're just messing around with it in some way. And I really liked the idea that there just was a lot of different functionality there. So combine that with, I went to the very first Japanese Grand Prix, a whole bunch of Wizards people went, and I noticed that there were players that were using trading cards from other trading cards, not from Magic, to represent tokens that they had. And maybe, I'm trying to remember if any of them, I remember people were playing with cards that represented things. So I was making Unglued, I'm like, well, I know tokens are a thing, and right now, there's no way to represent tokens with cards. I go, what if I just made some cards that represented tokens? And so I picked a bunch of ones that were pretty popular. And then what I also did at the time was I didn't label them. I just put pictures on them. I didn't put power toughness on them. Like, one of the ones I made was, like, it's a soldier. But it could be a warrior. Or it could be a Kel'Doran, whatever Kel'Doran was. Like, it could be whatever you wanted it to be. It's white, you know, it's a white token. And I made one sheep token and one squirrel token. Sorry, I made a squirrel token. The squirrel token was for, there's a card in the set that made squirrel tokens, so I made a squirrel token. But anyway, I made actual tokens. I made actual card tokens. So what would happen years later is the Magic brand team decides that they want to start advertising inside the Magic booster, make ad cards. Now, the idea was it was only advertising elements of the game. It wasn't advertising other products. But, like, oh, are you aware that Gatherer exists? Are you aware that there's certain other products you might enjoy? Are you aware? It just was sort of making Magic players more aware of other Magic things. Because one of the things we learned is the only place you could advertise that we 100% knew Magic players would see was in Magic boosters. So when they added the ad card, they came to us and said, well, look, we're planning to advertise on the card, but the back of the card could be, like, if you guys want to use it, like, if R&D has some function for it, you can use the back of the card. And one of the things we chose to do with that was make token cards. There's other rule things we did, play aids, but we chose to make token cards. And the reason for that was, A, we were recognizing how we were using tokens more and more, and B, the Unglued tokens have been very popular. And so it sort of said, okay, we should start doing that. So we're starting to put tokens into boosters. So sometime around that time, I'm not exactly sure when tokens started going to boosters. Also something I did not specifically put in my article. So in Mirrodin Besieged, we were trying to figure out, the first time we had been to Mirrodin, equipment got created for the first time. And so we were trying to do something with equipment. We were back in Mirrodin, but Mirrodin was fighting with the Phyrexians, and Mirrodin Besieged was all about how the Phyrexians, there's a war for the fate of Mirrodin. In fact, we didn't even tell the audience what the outcome of the war was going to be. And the third set was either going to be Mirrodin Pure, meaning Mirrodin 1, or New Phyrexia, meaning New Phyrexia 1. Spoiler, New Phyrexia 1. So, in it, we were trying to show how the Phyrexians were warping the items of Mirrodin, because the Phyrexians come in, and they sort of make you into them, right? They start absorbing your people and your things and your technology. So the idea we came up with was called Living Weapon. So Living Weapon was you made these 00 black germs, but then you automatically equipped the equipment to it. And all the equipment had granted you usually power and toughness, at least toughness. So the idea is that it was an equipment that you could count as a creature, essentially, because when you played it, it right away was a creature. You didn't have to equip it to anything. Now, if the creature died, if the germ died, the equipment stayed and you could equip it to something else. But Living Weapon, I believe, was the very first time that we make a mechanic that has a counter built into it. Meaning, in order to play this whole mechanic, not a card, like one of the things, that, I mean, for many years in Magic, look, certain cards make tokens. You don't want to play tokens, don't play those cards. Obviously, something like Fallen Empires and like Saprolings, the Thralls and Saprolings, there were different things that were very ingrained. There were themes that used tokens. Like, you can't play a Sapling deck without having tokens. And stuff like Goblins. I mean, there definitely were decks that were more and more leaning toward having access to tokens. But if you really didn't want to play it, you didn't have to. You know, if you didn't play that card. But we started realizing that how much players were really embracing tokens, and we were starting to make tokens. And before we put tokens in packs, we started making tokens as stuff we would give away in stores. Before tokens became something that happened, they were popular in Unglued, and then we started doing them as like giveaways, like store promos and things. And then eventually we started putting them into boosters. Living Weapon is just like one of the evolutions of counters is, okay, they're so useful, we're gonna start building whole mechanics with them. So Living Weapon, I believe, was the first one. And it really sort of grew from there. Now, one of the next big innovations, which became pretty important, was in Shadows over Innistrad. So we decided on a return to Innistrad. This is back when we first started doing returns. We're like, oh, let's really shake up our returns so they're not too similar. We later learned actually people like them to be more similar. But anyway, instead of doing Gothic Horror, we decided to do Cosmic Horror. And part of Cosmic Horror is it always starts with, weird disturbances. So we decided the first set, Shadows of Innistrad, would be the investigation set. We're like, oh, what strange things are happening. And then you learn about all the weird things in Eldritch Moon. So the second set, it was a two-block set. You learn about all the weird things, and Emrakul's there, and he's warping things and mutating things, you know. But anyway, we wanted to have a mechanic called Investigate, because it was all about, the first set was all about investigation. Shadows of Innistrad was all about investigation. Jay showed up, he's wearing his detective outfit. And so we said, okay, well, what exactly does Investigate do? And our thought process was, well, draw a card kind of hits me, like, I investigate, well, what do I gain? Knowledge. How do I represent knowledge? Cards. The problem was, there's just only so much card drawing we can do in the set. And blue's really good at drawing cards. Other colors, not quite as efficient at drawing cards. So we said to ourselves, how do we draw half a card? That's what we wanted. Is there a way to draw half a card? And so we ended up with this idea of what if we made an artifact token? And the artifact token was something that you then had to spend mana and sacrifice to get a card. So you have two and sacrifice to get a card. And that was a cool way to get mana. Now, I should stress, The very first non-creature token actually shows up in Future Sight. In fact, on Ivory Mask, I think it's called. It basically is an enchantment you put on yourself, and then you put on all your... You make a copy of it and put it on all the other players. So it makes an enchantment, actually. The first non-creature token is an enchantment token. But then, during Theros block, we start making gold tokens. I think two cards make gold tokens. One of which is, like, King Midas. Our version of King Midas. It turns things into gold. So we like the idea of, hey, we're using tokens to represent creatures. There's no reason we can't represent other things. And so we start making artifact tokens. But the important thing of Shadows of Innistrad was this wasn't just, oh, we're using artifact tokens. It became a backbone. Like, there's a whole mechanic built around it. And then just clue tokens, because Investigate made clue tokens. Clue tokens became the structural element of the set. Because what we learned is, well, you can cast them for, you can sack them for cards, but you could also count them. There are artifacts in play. You could sack them for other things if you had other reasons to sacrifice artifacts. They are artifacts. You could count them because there are artifacts in play. Like, they had a lot of utility over and above getting you a card. So, yeah, they were half a card, but they had this other utility. So then when we get to Ixalan years later, we're doing a pirate theme because it's a typal set, and we had pirates, but we're blowing up pirates, making a big pirate theme. And we realize that, oh, it'd be really cool. Can we use gold? So the idea is, okay, pirates having gold, that seems awesome. But it turns out the second set in Kaladesh, Aether Revolt, had a mechanic, Improvise, I think it's called, which was like Convoke, but for artifacts, meaning it lets you tap artifacts to make spells cheaper. And it turns out that if you use gold with Improvise, you essentially get 2 mana out of every gold, because you can first tap it for the Improvise and then sack it, because gold didn't have a tap in the sack. So we're like, oh, okay, let's redo it. We'll add a tap to it. It won't cause a problem with Improvise. And then because we were redoing it, like, well, we'll give it a little more global name, a more universal name. So rather than gold, we called it Treasure. And Treasure could represent gold. And when you think of pirates, you kind of think of chests full of gold. But when we use Treasure in other places, it can mean other things. And so we used Treasure, and once again, it became very much a backbone. It became a structural component of the set. It's not just something that shows up on a card or two. And like I said, we had started doing that with creatures. Creature tokens had long become, ever since Fallen Empires, had become a structural thing you could build the set around. But now we're saying, oh, well, artifact tokens can do that function as well. And then when we get to Throne of Eldraine, we do food. We realize that there's a lot of themes in fairy tales with food. And the marriage between a token that gets you life and the idea of a food gets you health made a lot of sense. So the flavor was really spot on there. So we start figuring out that artifact tokens are just a really cool functional thing. And we would do power stones and blood and landers, and we would find a lot of other means to use them. In March of the Machine, we did, people don't call them Cocoon, but we changed the name. In March of the Machine, there's a mechanic that makes an artifact token that, it starts as a non-creature artifact token with +1/+1 counters on it, depending on what the number is associated with the mechanic. And then you can spend mana to flip it into a Phyrexian. So, like, you can spend it to turn it into a creature. And how big a creature depends on how many counters you put on it, but it does not become a creature until you turn into a creature. So that's us, for example, finding out a way to make sort of, I don't know if half a creature is the right term here, but much like the other things, I get a token that I can then turn into a card, life, mana, and now a creature. We also would find enchantments, while artifacts tend to get the jump. Artifacts are a little bit easier conceptually to use. But in Wilds of Eldraine, we had individual things that used enchantment tokens, like the shard tokens that Nico makes, and there have been some isolated ones. But Wilds of Eldraine makes rolls. And what rolls are is, oh, well, in fairy tales, there's certain things that you see all the time. This is the young hero. This is, the wicked, one, or whatever. And so the monster. And so rolls are our first time we did auras. Especially as a structural component, where it wasn't the first time, I don't think rolls are the first aura tokens, but they are the first sort of structural component. But anyway, a big part of Wilds of Eldraine is the idea that I can make these tokens that then give me extra value. And because I'm making enchantments, we can make enchantments matter in a way that's hard to do. Really what tokens do, once again, is it allows you to have to make more than one permanent with one card. And there's a lot of value in use of that. And so we've found that tokens more and more have become structural. So much so that one of the things we did when we went to play design is, after we went to play boosters, was starting to up the number of tokens that just exist percentage-wise. It's become a very important play aid, and so we're trying to make sure that people have that. In my article, there are endless mechanics that make use of counters. And we keep finding new ways to use them. That's the interesting thing to me. Like, one of the things, the reason I was interested in writing this whole article series is there are not a lot of things in Magic that are as useful as a token. I mean, counters and tokens specifically, there's just so much use to them. And one of the things to be aware of is we understand that, hey, every time you add a component that's not in the deck, you know, you are adding something. And the reason we sort of went along with that is saying that, you know, there is so much design value, and tokens and counters have been so popular, we really sort of leaned into them. Now, we need to be careful. Like, one of the things, you know, there is pushing anything too far. And there's definitely one of the things, like, we note, now that we have tokens in products, we're very conscious of how many unique different ones we have. We want to make sure that we make counters for them. We want to make sure we're not doing anything that is sort of making it too hard to play. And we also understand that there's people who sort of opt into playing with tokens and counters. But anyway, it's a very rich and diverse tool, and something that I don't even think when Richard made the high, he really even understood how much potential it had. I mean, he knew it had potential, obviously. But it has been, like, really, once again, the article, which I'm not sure if all the articles even out when this goes up. I recorded it the week that the first one went up. This might go up. Actually, this is probably going to go up before they're all up, I guess. But one of the things that's about the article is just how, like, early in the first part of the series, I'm just talking about, like, an individual card, and for the first time we did this thing. And by the end, I'm talking, like, whole swaths of mechanics. There's two sets off the top of my head where there's two whole different mechanics that use counters that came out within the last year or year and a half. It's fascinating from a design standpoint of just how useful they are. We keep finding more uses for them. We keep finding other ways to innovate on them. It definitely is this component that it has a lot. Like, sometimes one of the things that's interesting when you start using a new component is you don't necessarily know how much use it has. And you'll try it and you'll see. And sometimes, it's really useful. And sometimes it's not as useful as you think. But every once in a while, you find a vein that is so deep, and tokens really fall into that vein. Like, there's just endless things you can do with tokens. I believe tokens will be part of Magic for as long as Magic exists, which in my mind will be a long, 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 long time. So I predict that I will probably, or I or somebody at some point, will write an article years from now talking about, here's the further evolution of tokens. Here's all the new things since the last time we talked about it that tokens have done. So anyway, I hope today was a good sort of oversight. If you haven't started reading the column in Making Magic, it's called The History of Tokens. And like I said, it's three parts. I don't know that all three parts are out as of you listening to this. But also, a lot of people listen to this long after this was put up. So if you've not read the article, it's on the Magic Daily MTG. And I go into great detail. I really go, far more than... Usually it's funny. Usually the article is lighter and it's the podcast that goes in more detail. But because this was a three-part article, I'm kind of hitting the overviews in the podcast and I hit the detail in the article. So a little backwards from how it normally happens. So anyway, I heartily recommend reading the article. If you enjoyed today hearing all about the history of tokens, that article is you'll find very interesting. But anyway, guys, I am now at work. So we all know that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.